Caller, let me help you.
My roommate isn't wearing my clothes. What should I do?
Go to AT&T. They're giving you up to $650 in value to help you switch when you trade in your current smartphone and buy a new one on AT&T Next.
Wow, $650? How does that help with my situation?
$650 in value can help you save up for your own place or a really nice deadbolt. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Limited time offer. Each line requires eligible port-in, trade-in, purchase, and service. Get minimum of $10 trading credit plus prepaid card and amount of device balance or early termination fee, less trade-in. Fees, charges, and restrictions apply. See store for details.
Good morning, and welcome.
Radio.
Good morning, and welcome.
Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today we're going to have a very special guest, Joan Bersanco, who is a Harvard-trained scientist and psychologist, an expert in body-mind-spirit connection, and she just wrote a book called Fried. And we're going to talk a little bit about what Fried represents, because in our society we're all faced with a lot of burnout for a myriad of different reasons, whether it's personal, family, job, career, just basic burnout from the life that you've been living and really needing to make a shift and a change. So Joan's going to join us very soon. I'm waiting for her to call in so you all can bear with me. But we're going to talk a little bit about what burnout is and the difference between burnout and stress, because burnout and stress in her book is detailed very differently. And burnout is more of a condition, and stress is more temporary. So we're going to discuss that with Joan as soon as she calls. And we're also going to be talking to David John Peckinbaugh, who was the inspiration to the title of Fried, who is also both an author and a musician. And he's going to come on a little bit later in the show in regard to talking to us a little bit about how he was inspired through Joan and by Joan, and also in regard to really where he is in regard to the whole burnout situation, if he's feeling it, if he's gone through it, and his personal experience with it. Now, I am live with you guys, and I am on the air, and I have no one calling me, so I am hoping that Joan knows this is Eastern Standard Time. Anyway, let's continue onward and upward. I've had a very interesting morning. Woke up this morning and my car was broken into. So in taking the kids to school at 5 to 7, my car was trashed. Everything from my glove box and my console was thrown all over, and it was a really interesting experience as we drove to school in silence because of the weird vibe that we had. So I kind of have mixed feelings about this. They did catch the guy, and yet I have a real compassionate side of myself for him because obviously he was down on his luck and looking for things. And, you know, unfortunately, if he had just asked me, I would have given him what I had, but I have some mixed feelings about this. So, yeah, it was kind of creepy to be violated in regard to my vehicle, but, you know, I also have a lot of compassion for this guy. And in talking about what we're on the subject of with burnout and Fried, we're kind of at a point in our lives and in society right now where everybody's feeling burnout. We're all feeling stressed. We're all feeling that piece of kind of disconnect in regard to ourselves, as well as a piece of ourselves that it's really like lost ourselves in regard to where we are in our groundedness. As you can tell, I'm a little frazzled right now because I don't have a guest. So, David, if you're listening, you can feel free to call in early. The number, again, to call in live if anyone's interested is 213-286-6743. I'm welcoming any phone calls right now. So please, you know, feel free to call in and ask a question. Just shoot the day with me, and let's try and fill this hour up. We don't even have to talk about stress. We don't have to talk about burnout. We can talk about what you're going through today. Feel free to call in. 213-286-6743. So today, let's see, we're moving into a new astrological sign today, that would be Taurus. So that should be a real nice earth and grounding sense of self for us, and coming out of the fiery Aries and moving into Taurus. It's also a lot of energy going on right now. I'm seeing a lot of people really kind of needing to cocoon. And this can also be brought up when Joan does call in to talk about how we do nurture ourselves and how we do take care of ourselves when we are going through a bit of a stressful time. It seems like the last 2 weeks seems to have been, somebody's calling me. God bless you, whoever you are. Here you go. Hello, this is Lisa.
Karen,
hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
It's
Hi,
Karen.
This is Lisa. Hi,
Lisa.
Hi,
Karen. From
Karen.
Fort Lauderdale.
God bless you for calling in.
How are you?
I'm waiting for my. I'm okay. I've been worse. I could be better. But yeah, I'm hoping that Joan, you know, gets my message and calls through soon. But how is your day going, Karen? Are you feeling the vibes and the shifts going on here?
I really am. I really am. And unfortunately, I have to talk kind of low because I am at work. But I was just having a conversation with Elizabeth last night, and we were talking about that feeling of there's been so much going on, and yet in the downtime where now, right now, there's nothing going on, I feel this need to fill it with things. And it's like there's this feeling of, you know, everything has passed, and yet I'm not completely comfortable and feel the need to, not to call in drama or stress, but to do things to, you know, to not be okay with just sitting with the silence.
And that's, you know, that's a great topic, because that's usually where we all go. We're so used to being in the moment of acting and performing and doing that when there's that place in between where there's something new ready to come in, but it hasn't revealed itself yet. For those of us who are kind of always on that, you know, type A personality and that proactive approach, it's very difficult for us to kind of just trust and have the faith that as the path is unfolding and as things are starting to shift and move into our lives, that there is that little gap and there is that little piece, and to kind of just trust into that breath in that spot of knowing that, yes, indeed, this is the place of, you know, where we can really regain our balance, where we can really regain our sense of, you know, who we are and our values and our beliefs, and really ground them even more so that
right.
when that piece comes in, you welcome it and you don't run from it, or it doesn't scare you. Because a lot of times, you know, we know there's a piece coming in, but then it shows itself and it's, you know, it's kind of frightening because it's a little overwhelming, or it's a
right.
new emotion, or it's a new feeling. And you know, there's so much that we become conditioned to accepting that is both healthy and unhealthy. And so,
right.
you know, Karen, audience, Karen is a very dear friend of mine. God bless you for calling in. And Elizabeth is another friend of ours. So I don't mean to, like, leave my audience out like we're talking about people we don't know, but these are good soul people that you would love as well. But, you know, there's this piece also that people are going through. Our topic today is supposed to be about Fried, Joan Bersenko's book that she wrote, Fried, and it's about burnout and stress. And, you know, you're a type A. You know, we can relate to each other on this level, that sometimes it's very difficult to kind of take that breath and step back and have
right.
that peace of knowing that, you know, things are shifting and going in the direction that we're co-creating, but at the same point, it's that faith piece. Sometimes we need validation for faith. Sometimes we need, you know, a little tap on the shoulder, a little angel coming in and saying, hey, yeah, you know, I'm cheering you on. It's okay. It's good to go. Keep going. Because there's always that, you know. And it's so natural when we've had heartache or misfortune or, you know, crazies in our past that we go to that thought or feeling that that's going to repeat itself. So if we haven't experienced much joy, it's almost a foreign concept to embrace. So
right. Or that feeling of that when we're not fried or something like that, that there's something wrong. If we're not completely like, oh my God, what's happening? Can I deal with this now? Can I deal with, you know, the next thing that comes my way? And again, like I said, not to be calling that in, but, you know, to just sit with, wow, it's okay to breathe. It's okay to relax into this space of, wow, nothing stressful is happening. You know, it already happened. You know, I've already been through it. And now I'm on the other side going, oh, now what's going to happen? Like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it doesn't have to be that way.
And we get used to that. Yeah.
Right.
Because we get used to that. And that's like living in a fire. It's like, you know, there's never a peace. There's never a sense of you know, ah. And when you are constantly – I lived like this in 2004 and 2005. My life was so thrown up in the air that I literally did not know from one day to the next what I was going to focus my attention on. And we lost everything. You know, two hurricanes came in and a tornado, and we lost everything. In addition, I was sick. In addition, my marriage was crumbling. In addition, my kids were all disrupted. So there was so many, and my son got very ill. So it was like a series of events, and it took me till I left my husband for me to actually realize that I did not have to live in this cycle of crazy and chaos anymore. And it was so such an awakening for me, because I was unaware of how much that I was used to feeling the crazy, that I was subconsciously expecting it. And I didn't even know I was subconsciously expecting it. I wasn't, you know, I'm a glass is always full kind of person. And yet I was waiting for that other shoe to drop, like you said. And, you know, a lot of times we have to shift the energy. Well, always we have to shift the energy within ourselves before it starts to shift on the outside. And and sometimes we have to make dramatic changes. But you've gone through some very big changes over the last year. And I can relate to all of that. You and I have paralleled quite a bit in so many different ways. And, you know, change is not always easy. In fact, most change, which people, you know, people are afraid of change in a lot of ways, because it always does shake your roots.
And it also, it doesn't, you don't always know what the changes are going to be. And if you can't see what's out in front of you, then you have to deal with all of the feelings that come up as a result.
And that's all that discomfort, but it's also
a great space, because you get to say, you got to get to create it along the way.
Right. And you also can look at that pain or that discomfort and know that as you're going through it, this too is going to pass, that, you know, it's not an inevitable condition that's staying around forever. It's a condition that is really coming into your essence, your energy field, your life, your reality, to shift you. And if you refuse to shift, if you want to put your head in the sand and dig it a little deeper, you know, I have many family members that I tell them, you know, dump the bucket of sand. Dear God, you know, do you want to get your head in there a little deeper? You want to come out and breathe some air? You know, you have to take initiative, and you have to take, you know, look at the world around you and see what's changing and see what you want to embrace, because there is so much. But you know, inevitably change is a very challenging piece for so many people. And the one thing that I can tell you, because I've gone through so very much of it, and I know other people who have gone through worse, it does get better. And it doesn't mean that it's going to immediately feel better, but it does get better. And as long as you're putting your foot in front of the other and you're progressing with optimism or with faith or with, you know, an intention, there is a growth with this that really starts to come together, that you start to see reflected in your internal self first and then your external world.
Right.
So do you feel like your shifts that you've gone through, I mean, you know, you've gone through, we've you've experienced the death of your ex-husband. You have a son who, you know, greatly was affected by the loss. You moved. You had to change locations for him as well.
Right.
A lot of shifts and a lot of changes. And when it affects more than just us, like as mothers, it affects our children, it's a much deeper core that's affected. Because we know we'll get through it. But when we look at our kids, you know, and we see what they're going through, you want, you know, the natural mothering instinct is to jump in and make it all right. Well, sometimes you can't. Sometimes they have to muddle through it too.
Right.
And how do you feel like you're coming to the end of that? Do you feel like you're coming to the end of, like, you know, some sense of peace, some sense of truth, some sense of it all.
Oh, for sure. That's why I feel so uncomfortable because, you know, like I said, I mean, just almost for the past 2 years, the level of experience and growth and confrontation with myself that I've had to go through, and not to mention all of those externals, you know, losing my son's father and also moving, those all, you know, they just consume your world.
Right.
And so, you know, having been married for so long with all the chaos as well that the marriage brought and then everything after it that's happened, you know, there was so much stress that all of a sudden I actually feel like, oh, there's nothing going on. And
well, I do feel like I'm at the end.
But hold on to that
because something's about ready to jump out of the bushes for you, and you can embrace it, and you can really, you know, start to, like, laugh and frolic and have a good time. Hang on, Karen, because I do believe, God bless us, Joan's on the phone. So let's hang tight and see if this is Joan. Hold on. Hello, is this Joan?
Hey, Lisa. We had a dead phone, so there was stress on both ends. But I'm glad to be here.
God bless you for calling. Thank you so much for calling in.
We were filling the lines with stress talk.
So we're going to everybody, my audience, welcome Joan Bersanco, author of Fried, Harvard trained scientist and psychologist. Welcome, Joan. Thank you so much for being on Unlimited Reality.
You are so welcome. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, I'm so glad. I've been looking forward to it, too. We're going to have a fun show, and I love your topic. You have a great topic for the global effect of what's going on with everyone's life. Was this really inspired more personally, or was it inspired more because of the global reality of what's happening right now?
Well, you know, first of all, I've always been interested in what makes people resilient, what makes them creative, who thrives in really difficult times, and really who despairs and gives up. And, of course, there's always, I think, a personal aspect to the things that intrigue us. And for me, that was my, you know, my own history, because earlier in my life I wasn't a very resilient person. And when I was challenged by stress, my nervous system really went out of whack. And when that happens, you release a lot of cortisol. You were talking about stress. That affects your memory. It affects your creativity. And I decided early on I had to deal with that. So I've been learning to be resilient since my 20s. And then, as you know, I founded a mind-body clinic with Dr. Herbert Benson at one of the Harvard teaching hospitals. And I began to really look at the difference between people who'd been through, you know, divorce, job loss, serious illness, because I was running an AIDS clinic, a cancer clinic, and a clinic for people with stress-related disorders. And I began to get a good sense of what we're going to be talking about. Who is it that really makes the proverbial lemonade out of lemons? That,
right,
in terms of resilience, they don't go back to being who they were before the illness or before the divorce. They go on to be something something very different. They go on to develop wisdom. They often develop a sense of compassion for others. Tremendous strengths that were latent become manifest. And they can often look back, and while they wouldn't want to repeat the experience, say that they certainly developed through it. And now there's a very big interest in resilience because of what's going on in the world. And there have also been a lot of studies, like who are the resilient PEOs, POWs, PEO, where did that come from? POWs, who in concentration camps or, God forbid, genocide situations, any difficult situation, manages to come out still functional. Then, of course, with children, it turns out, I think most people don't realize that, but adverse childhood experiences have, even 50 years later, are a predictor of your health. And the more adverse childhood experiences, the more likely you are to have health problems, mental health problems, behavioral problems, and addiction problems years later. But, of course, some children who live in neglectful or abusive circumstances manage to come out all right. And I think these are major questions that we need to ask of ourselves, and that is, how can we learn how to be resilient? And how can we form a society, by the way, that treats its children better and treats its veterans better and its troops, so that less PTSD gets developed? We all know what a big problem that is.
Right, right. And it's you know, it's one of those things that they love to prescribe pills for, and they love to put you on antidepressants, and they love to mask what it is you're going through, where, you know, it's not really evolved through the system. It's not really evolved through the consciousness. It's just masked. And so your work is so poignant in this regard, because you combine all the body, mind, spirit combinations of holistic health, in addition to addressing how to overcome this and how to, you know, also kind of target when you are in burnout. You list 12 aspects of what, you know, the stages of burnout or aspects of burnout, and maybe we can get into that a little bit. You have,
yeah, we will. And, you know, there really are two things here that, you know, my last two books, Lisa, the very last one was Fried, called Why You Burn Out and How You Revive, that we're about to get into. The book previous to that was called It's Not the End of the World, How to Develop Resilience in Times of Change. And that's what I've just been talking about, who is resilient. And it has a great deal to do with the subject of burnout. So it's a good segue, and we'll get to cover them both, I think, in our time together.
Wonderful, so wonderful. Well, you know, you've tackled a really wonderful topic for the times. And, you know, there's very few people who aren't feeling some element of, you know, their buttons pushed, and they're at their wit's end on many different levels. And you also, you know, you really categorize this, which I really loved, is that you say burnout is not stress. There's a difference. So let's talk a little bit first about what the, you know, burnout versus stress.
Okay. Well, burnout itself comes from becoming so unbalanced, feeling so driven to get everything done, that eventually it creates a separation between you and life, so that you're just living to work, your values die away. You know, here it's like Christmas or something, and you decide you'd rather work than be with your family. You begin to develop a number of stress-related disorders, and there are stages of this. We'll go through this. But it starts with a place that I think the majority of us are at these days, and that is we feel overwhelmed. You know, I was recently talking to a group of psychologists, and I asked them, I said, you know, raise your hand if you feel overwhelmed and like there's so much on your plate you can never get it done. And virtually every hand in the room went up. And I think all of us are really just suffering from too much information, a huge overload, much more than we can reasonably do. And some people are able to just kind of let that go and do, you know, do what they can. They know how to say no. They can easily disappoint somebody else so that they can have a life themselves. They love what they do. It's rewarding for them. And they also are able to say, you know, I need time with my spouse or I need time with my kids. And I have to tell my boss what's doable and what's not doable because I understand that if I take on too much, then the quality of my work will go down. That's the kind of person who does not burn out. And the kind of person who does burn out is the person, it seems so sad, but, you know, the person who's most idealistic, who most wants to do their very best, who most wants to be able to bring forth what's in them as a gift to the world, and they will often burn out first because they'll put the work before anything else and, you know, and feel really like, oh, I have to get this done. Or the other thing that causes burnout, for example, is being in a job where you're a square peg in a round hole. And the job itself, the demands of the job are not in line with your particular talents. That burns people out. But, you know, you go around these days and people say to each other, I'm fried. And when I decided to write this book, I myself was fried. And I said, I won't write this book until I figured out how not to be fried. And that actually took 4 years before I was in a position to write the book from a place of integrity. And I thought, you know, I have so many case histories from working with people. But I decided I would collect case histories in an interesting way. And that is, I started to post questions about burnout on Facebook. And I have a very large community of fans. I hate that word. Of people who, a very large community. It really is just a community on Facebook. And we began to go into depth with people's experiences of burnout, of how it was they had revived themselves. And it was really great. So the book also has got quite a number of little quotes and snippets and anecdotes from people on Facebook that I combined, of course, with my clinical experience in the literature on burnout. But let me get specific. Here's how you measure burnout. There are three scales.
Okay.
And your listeners can think about these scales and think about whether they might be burned out. The first is emotional exhaustion. You know, when you get to that point, you're so emotionally exhausted, you can't listen to people. You can't be present to people. You have a chance to do something wonderful, and you're just so emotionally exhausted, there's no room for even enjoyment. So emotional exhaustion. The second is called, at Berkeley, Christina Maslach, who invented this scale, calls it depersonalization. And what she really means by that is you lose your capacity for empathy. So let's take this example, healthcare providers. Healthcare providers need to have empathy. The relationship is the medicine.
Right.
Being listened to is so important. But when you lose your empathy and the person before you becomes an annoyance and you get snarky with them, that really is a big part of our healthcare dilemma. You don't get very good healthcare when that's what's happening. So we've just mentioned emotional exhaustion, and I like to use the term compassion fatigue for that second. And even if you're not a healthcare provider, if you find yourself getting snarky with your loved ones, that's compassion fatigue. You can't relate to them. There's just nothing left in you because you are so emotionally exhausted. I always know
Great point.
If I start to get If I start to get snarky with my husband, I catch it right away. That's a symptom of burnout for me. He's such a love. The third aspect of burnout is that you start to function poorly. No matter what your function is, whether it's at work or at home, you're just not doing a very good job. And so this is not, it's not a pretty picture. I think all of us really like to bring forth the best inside of ourselves. And with burnout, there's nothing left to give. There's nothing there. It's like we've lost who we are. We become empty of ourselves. We become truly unable to relate to other people or even relate to beauty. And that's why it often gets mistaken for depression, because those of your listeners who are depressed may say, but wait, I just got pills for that. Well, here's the difference. You take a burned out person and you say, you know, go rest for a few days. And guess what? They perk up again. Somebody who's truly clinically depressed will not perk up so easily. But over time, here's what happens. It gets harder for the burned out person to perk up. And I'll go through a little bit of the 12 stages for you, and then we'll have a discussion. We're just going to lay the groundwork here.
Cool,
all the way back in, 1974, there was this psychologist, Herbert Freudenberger, and he was studying burned out people in corporate settings because, you know, if your personnel are burned out, the quality of work in your corporation goes way down. So corporations were very interested in how to keep people, you know, working at the top of their game. So Freudenberger interviewed, thousands of people over the years, and he, along with another colleague, Gail North, said, well, burnout doesn't come full-blown. What happens is that it happens in stages, and if you understand the stages, you can catch it, you can nip it in the bud before it gets to its worst stage, which in my parents' days they would have called a complete nervous breakdown. So I'll go through some of the stages with you. And like anything, you know, some people go through all of the stages, some go through none of the stages, some of the stages happen at the same time. There's variation, but this is the backbone of what it looks like.
Okay.
So it starts simply with overwork. And I have to tell you that this week I've definitely been in that state myself. I'm constantly making adjustments because always I could be overworking. So it's not uncommon. I am taking off, by the way, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because I see burnout sneaking up on me right now, Lisa. So,
me too, Joan. I'm taking those 3 days off myself.
Yeah, I mean that's what. And if you don't do that, then you're going to go down. You're going to go down the tubes. So the next step down the tubes, after working too hard, is you realize you're working so hard that you're ignoring your own needs. And that's when you realize, well, I was supposed to have my teeth cleaned 3 months ago. I never made the appointment. Or, gee, I've been, you know, really meaning to go in and get my contact lenses checked, and now I'm on my last pair, but I didn't make time for myself. Or I've had that twinge in my back again, and I really know that I need to be taking some Pilates. I need to be taking some yoga. I need to be strengthening my core and my back muscles, but who has time for doing that? Because everybody else's needs have taken precedence over your own. So that's another stage of burnout. Now you're really on the slippery slope because you're ignoring yourself. I'm not going to go through every stage, but I'll give you some representational ones on the way down. The next would be, you know, that you really start to get a lot of stress-related symptoms, because while burnout is not caused by stress, which you made that point right in the beginning, it itself is stressful, definitely stressful. Burnout is caused, turns into a total lack of motivation that's really caused by having poor boundaries and letting the world overwhelm you and not being resilient enough to figure out what to do for yourself in this difficult situation. But anyhow, so you start to have stress-related symptoms. You start to feel lousy. And what we know, what I've known, you know, from my clinical experience and experience as a stress researcher through the years, is that somewhere, depending on whose data you look at, but somewhere between 70 and 90% of the reasons why people visit their family doctor are for stress-related disorders. I thought I had chronic fatigue syndrome. I saw so many doctors, acupuncturists, you name it, because I was so completely exhausted, my muscles ached. Some days I could, you know, the pain was so awful. I was burned out. That's what that was a symptom of in the end. I even had a physician who said, well, you know, you're somatizing. It must be because you're depressed. And I spent 2 weeks on an antidepressant, which made me so restless and angry. The side effects were so terrible that I just stopped taking it, which was fine because I didn't need it. And this is one of the problems, that your average family doctor doesn't know anything about burnout. In fact, your average psychologist knows nothing about burnout. And so people keep mistaking it for depression, but they're different. So after you start developing symptoms, other kinds of things start to go on, and that is the development of cynicism. Like, you know, why bother? Why do this? Why bother? Life sucks. Things are not very good. I don't like that person. And really negativity starts to surface, and that's when you lose empathy. You can see what that scale of compassion fatigue has to do with. You lose empathy for the people around you. And, of course, you've long ago lost any empathy for yourself. You haven't been taking care of yourself. So after that point, what starts to happen is you lose your values. And, you know, if your values have been, I'm a person who puts my family first, well, you know, forget it. That flew out of the window long ago with the overwork. And if you start to say, you know, what I really value every day is calling my elderly mother, and then you realize I haven't called her, you know, in a week, and this is starting to become a pattern, we can all think of lots of values that may disappear at times like these. And what happens at the very, very bottom is we really lose our motivation. We don't care anymore. Can't get the work done. You find yourself sitting, as a writer. I would find myself sitting in front of the computer, and I'd write the same sentence. I'd write and rewrite it all day long and never get anything done. Or I know of a cardiac surgeon who, you know, he was ready to make an incision, and he couldn't remember where to make it. It's like your brain is literally fried. And oftentimes there's a tremendous health crisis at this point as well.
Right.
So burnout, you know, when we walk around and we say, oh, I'm fried, we ought to know that it's not really benign. Misery loves company, all right, but we need to have our best, most creative selves on board if we're going to cooperate in remaking this world in this time of tremendous change and shift.
Right. And it's so important when we have support that can also come in and, you know, help us as we're moving through these shifts, because oftentimes those who suffer from burnout rarely ask for help or seek help, and that's also kind of contributes to the burnout effect. They're used to doing everything, and so therefore they do it. And have you found that that's a, you know, contributing factor? That kind of personality trait?
You know, I think part of the problem is people don't know what's wrong with them, and they don't know where to look for help. And, you know, there's a lot of places to look for help, everything from, you know, a therapist to somebody to come and help you organize your life and your clutter, streamline your use of time, clarify your priorities. And I thought there's
great
a lot
point.
Of books on that, you know, a lot
right.
of books on how to do that. But burnout is deeper than changing
yeah.
your to-do list around and learning how to manage your time. It really has to do most deeply with the relationship you have with yourself and with life. And that's why when I wrote Fried, it has a lot of reflection exercises, writing exercises where you really sit and you say to yourself, wow, what's going on? What
right.
makes me tick? Why is this happening? How interesting my responses to things. I wonder where they come from. And what you really need to do when you're burned out, somebody who's really burned out, no matter what else it costs you, you've got to step out of the fray for a while
mm-hmm.
and take some time off. And I think we all know people who've said, I'm fried. I got to do that. I'm taking a month off. Or
right.
I'm taking a week off. And for some of us, we say, what? I could never get a month off. But, you know, most
right.
of us could get a week off. And it's not a week that you schedule with doing a million things. It needs to be a week where you can get away, where you can rest, where you can let some of the stress out of the system so that you can start to see straight once again. And that's
right.
part of what Fried is for, the book, is to help people do that.
And it also helps but, making personal boundaries for yourself, right? It's like, you know, putting up
to.
Right, right. Because if, you know, the boundaries come in, you know, I find it a lot with clients who have been mothers and nurturers in the family so much, and they've lost their identity. They've lost their drive, their passions. And that really contributes, and they feel a sense of guilt that they really don't have this real unconditional peace for the family right now. Right now they're just pissing them off. And so, you know,
right.
there's that goes on with it. And I really, you know, I always want to encourage women that, yes, family's always important. I have four kids, always important. However, try not to lose sight of your passions because that really
oh,
is a quick burnout.
Yeah,
right.
because that's what happens. You start to feel resentful of the very people, you know, that
yeah.
you love the most. And when that starts to happen, you know, I need a mid-course correction here. And that's what burnout really is. It tells you, hey, you know, you're lost in the dark woods here. And you're
right.
going down the wrong path. You need to step out and get above it and take a look. Where's the right path? Where have I lost my passion? How can I get my passion back? And it's critically important.
It's
and,
so
you know,
important.
Boundaries are hard for women. It's hard
yes.
to say no to somebody when that person, you know, you could really help them if you did something. And I think in the end, the only way to learn how to say no in an appropriate way when someone asks you something that you'd really like to do is to know what are you saying yes to for yourself? And
yes.
And can you do that? So a really simple example for me is this. One of my big yeses, I live up in the mountains, and I moved here because it's beautiful and I like nature. I like to be outdoors. One of my big yeses is to get outside every day and hike in the mountains. That's and here, there's no such thing as taking a walk. And walking out the door is a hike wherever you're going and take my dog. And so
wonderful.
If somebody says to me, you know, can you do this for me or that for me or read, you know, read and review this book or give me guidance on this, or if there's too many, you know, radio interviews even, what will happen to me is I can't get outside. And in saying yes to someone else, I've said no to something that's incredibly important to my health and to my joy in life.
Right,
so
and you come first, you know.
Yeah, you come first.
You know?
If you don't, you know, it's such a hackneyed thing. I can't stand this metaphor, but I'll use it anyhow because everybody knows it. It know, put on your own oxygen mask first in the airplane before helping the person next to you.
Exactly.
Because if you've fainted, you're useless. So that's a very important thing, and women really need to understand.
We're raised with this piece of sacrifice, and that sacrifice is great. However, you know, you have to really self-love first. And in saying that, we're going to bring on a good friend of yours on the show, who is quite, you know, inspirational to the title of your book, Fried. We have David on the line here.
Oh,
and David John Peckinpah, who was the creator of the title Fried for your book, is
fantastic.
Joining us. David, are you there?
I am, Lisa. Hello. Hi,
Joel. Hello,
David.
Welcome.
Hi, honey. How are you?
I am well. Yes.
Okay,
yes,
I have to say a few words about David, Lisa.
Wonderful.
First of all, people ought to go to David John Peckinpah's page. Peckinpah, because he's a very, very popular blogger. He says things like they are. He's witty. He's wise. He's absolutely the best. And what happened, he was always saying wonderful things when we were having the conversations about burnout. But then I said, hey, you know, we need a title. And people came up with all kinds of titles. And David came up with the title Fried, because he said this really is a word for our times. And that's what I thought. So he is the title master. And I'm so happy to talk to you today, David. This is
yeah,
cool.
It's great to touch base again, Joan. It's great to hear your voice.
Yeah,
well, tell
too.
Us, David, how did Joan's book, Fried, affect you? Was it something you resonated with? Was it something that you've experienced in your life? How did you resonate with that?
Yeah, very much so. I learned a lot. I always do from Joan. I've been learning a lot from Joan for, you know, 20, 25 years. I mean, she's amazing, and that's what I love about Joan's work, is she always incorporates science and the latest research on mind-body medicine and understanding of how things like stress and then burnout now affects us. And one of the things that was really profound for me is that, you know, if you're successful, and you're probably more susceptible to burnout, because it's about the things that we want to do, that we care about, and we throw ourselves so deeply into them, and we're so passionate about investing ourselves. But the irony is that, like you both mentioned, with women and motherhood, for instance, we can lose ourselves in that.
Right.
You know, because we've thrown ourselves so passionately and so enthusiastically, and we're so idealistic, and we think if we do it, and we do it more, and we do it harder, and we do it faster, and we do it better, and then
excellent,
you know,
like, point, David.
How did I get here?
Hey,
yeah,
David, I've
got
a question for you. About that, because you've got that beautiful little boy, Uriah. Was he born yet when you wrote the what's the title of the Shakespeare book for drama?
Buddha.
Oh, it's Buddha.
Buddha and Shakespeare.
Buddha and Shakespeare. Yes, David wrote a book, Buddha and Shakespeare, and it's a wonderful story that we're going to get into at another date. So go ahead, David. Share.
Were you burned out trying to balance things? What was going on for you? How was writing that book for you?
Yeah, he wasn't yet born. But like any creative pursuit, you know, you have those moments where you kind of feel it's hard, because you have to push through certain edges in life. You know, we have our own limitations and our own boundaries that are often inherited or mental, or even emotional discomfort. You know, we don't want to go into our own grief or torment from the past, but we also have to go in and feel that so we can reclaim ourselves, so we can reclaim our own emotions. But at the same time, we can't just keep pushing blindly. So it takes a lot of sensitivity about our own energy and our own emotions and our body and where we're at to know when we need to push through something, a wall or a limitation, and when we need to hold back because we're going to risk, you know, becoming cynical or depersonalized or not caring. So I wonder what Joan feels about that kind of difference or distinction between pushing through and, you know, holding back.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah, that's
yes.
a really good question, David, because, you know, for sure, there are times for all of us when, you know, the body is sending messages like, I'm tired, I don't want to do this, it's really hard. And you know that you absolutely have to push through, that something, you know, something extraordinary is going to come from pushing through, and you also know that it's a temporary situation, that it's not the story of your life, it's the story of this moment. And I always try to, you know, look at that and say, okay, I did it this week, like, all right, my whole body is saying, please, please, we need time off. But I've organized myself to take that time off, and so it's actually been okay. It's been a good week. I know, however, if I do that next week, then I start to get into fooling myself, because my goal is to keep in balance, but I know that balance is dynamic, so that there are times when I push too hard, and then there are times when I ease up and I regenerate. And all in all, that balance is okay for me. And I think you don't burn out when you have a balance like that. Because, you know, if you're passionate, at times, like, you've got all these projects going and you love them all. And they're all fine to a point. And, you know, then you make mid-course corrections. And I think it was one of your many wise comments, David, was that you can't write about something that you haven't experienced. That,
right.
You know, for me, writing Fried comes from actually knowing that landscape. And that's what we have to know. We have to know our own bodies. We have to know, okay, I've been here before. My body is telling me I can only sustain this for so long. And it's when we don't listen to our body and understand our own patterns, I think, at least for me, that's when it all gets out of hand.
Sure.
Yeah, it's about awareness.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that takes a different form with different people too, because some people, you know, are very tuned into their body and they know when the subtleties come in that they're being thrown off. And other times, you know, people can really be in denial in regard to their bodies and don't really listen to it. Are there some pointers we can have, or that there's an awareness in regard to, you know, tapping into that part of ourselves a little bit more, like when the body starts to shut down, before the body actually starts to shut down? I mean, it's more in the thought processing, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's
like where it begins.
You know, first of all, I think sometimes stuff goes on in an unconscious level, and so much of what goes on for us is unconscious that we really can't identify it. And the first place we notice it really is in our body. But I do also think that men and women pay attention to bodily cues perhaps in a different way. So I'd really like to hear from you, David. You know, kind of your response to Lisa's question, how do you notice burnout creeping up? What goes on? Do you notice it in your thoughts? Do you notice it in your body? How do you notice it?
All of those. Because it's all a continuum, right? You know, it's all connected, and if my body's feeling down, then my emotions are going to tend to be in a lower state too. And then I'll have thoughts that feed those lower energy emotions, which makes my body feel worse, and then it's just a vicious cycle. So it is about awareness, isn't it, about being in tune with where we're at with our own body and being a friend to our own incarnation, our own embodiment, and having a dialogue
right.
with ourselves so that we listen. It's so hard to listen because we don't really I hate to blame culture here, but we live in a culture where we really don't cultivate the ability to listen to ourselves. We're always taking direction from it. When we're kids, we're following somebody else's direction, some guidance. We get a job, we go to school, we're following.
Right.
So we're constantly listening to other people but ourselves. So it's really about becoming a,
You know, it's like the whole, okay, I'm giving my power away because I'm so used to doing it, you know, and it's, you know, the empowerment really is the wisdom within, and it's, you know, it does come out. I mean, you know, sometimes I, when I'm to my point and I've gotten to a point where I can see, okay, I'm slacking, you know, there's things that I'm missing here. So I immediately have to take some time off, and it's amazing to me how different I'll be after 3 days of not dealing with clients on the phone or in person versus just my kids for 3 days. Because it does, or God bless me, 3 days without kids. That's even a real treat. So you know, there's, and I love my kids, but I do love that time where I don't have them. So I do feel stress differently, but I see it coming in my thoughts first, and then I see it manifest in my physical form. Now, Joan, let's talk a little bit about how we can move through this or progress through this as we are taking charge and pampering ourselves and recognizing our burnout. And we're self-nurturing and taking time off. How can we stop ourselves from this happening again,
in addition to
tuning into ourselves?
Okay. Before I get into that, I notice on my phone here that you're breaking up a little bit, and I'm wondering if you can hear me all right.
You know, I hear you great now, but before you were breaking up. So
okay,
am I any clearer right now?
Yeah, there's something wrong with my phone line, Lisa, which is why I couldn't dial in earlier. So I just wanted to alert you because I hear this breakup. There's some possibility that the phone could go dead on us, but I know that you and David can carry on even if the phone line deserts us.
Not a problem.
Fire zone, they're still cleaning up. We were caught in a big wildfire up here. David knows all about this. This was the worst wildfire in Colorado history last Labor Day. And they've been doing a lot of aerial mulching and repairs, and I think probably that's what's going on with the phone lines. There's some kind of repair to something happening. So...
Now, did that affect your stress and burnout level when that happened? Because, dear God, if anything's going to affect burnout.
You know, sometimes, first of all, you just have to laugh. It's like the universe has a sense of humor. I just send in the final manuscript for Fried with the final revisions, and, you know, literally days later, this huge fire comes, and... Yeah, we couldn't even get back to see the house for almost 10 days. We thought we had no house. Most of the houses around us have burned down. And then we were evacuated while there was cleanup and other things happening for almost 2 months. So I thought, well, that's really interesting, isn't it? oftentimes what happens when you're fried is this. You lose track of possibilities, and you think that what you are currently doing is the only possibility open for you in life, and you get stuck in a rut. That's why people frequently, they don't change their circumstances. They don't leave, for example, relationships that are burning them out, or they don't leave their jobs, although in this economy that is harder to do. But what I learned was a huge and major lesson, and that was life was completely disrupted. I had very little time to get my work done because I was dealing with insurance. I was operating out of essentially a two-bedroom suite in a hotel, one of these residence inn things, and I thought, you know, the world didn't come to an end. I got fried by the fire, and I learned more about being fried, that I learned I'm so over-responsible, I do things to such a level that actually they don't need to be done to that level. And if I do things in a different way and approach them in a different way with much less perfectionism, I avoid at least the kind of fried that the book is about.
Wonderful.
But I would go
Wonderful.
Back now. In terms of recovering from fried and not being fried, I agree with you, David, that cultivating awareness is the absolute first tool. Because if you're not aware of what you're feeling, then you're not aware that you have choices. And what being fried really does to you is it says to you, hey, your life is not working the way that it is now. And you need to make another choice. And awareness and
we
choice.
We have 10 seconds, Joan.
Okay.
I want to thank you before we get cut off. God bless you for calling in and being on our show today. David, thank you so much. Guys, JoanBersanco.com, go check her out. She's a wealth of information. Thank you so much for joining us. God bless all of you. Joan and David, God bless you doubly. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a drill instructor directing a musical. Town Hut! Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands! Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step ball change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.
Adding the choice of a crispy chicken BLT to Wendy's 4 for $4 is the biggest thing since rappers trying to sing.
I got me a yacht and I sound like a robot.
But do you like the sound of this? Wendy's 4 for $4 now comes with a choice of a junior bacon cheeseburger or a crispy chicken BLT.
From Detroit to Macon, I keep it crisp like bacon.
Both are topped with crispy applewood smoked bacon and come with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4.
Oh, yeah.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii.
Is it a visa?
Yeah.
And is it a bank, like from a bank card, credit, debit, just debit? Let me look at it.
I hope this is just not additional problems.
Yeah, I hope the subject's like backed up and that's the main problem, you know.
I don't even want to fucking think about it right now. I can't.